So using mapping to strategically target areas with low access to contraception in Kinshasa, I was brought on, oh, sorry, and I have, like, my colleagues before, no conflict of interest to disclose that I know of. I was brought on that project because I realized that those databases during the first survey in 2012 contained GPS coordinates, and GPS coordinates tend to get me all excited because I thought, well, we could map all this information, and if we're going to talk about accessibility, then mapping might be the first thing we want to do, because the first condition to accessibility, even though there are many others, it's physical accessibility. So distance is the first obstacle to having access to family planning services. And on a city like Kinshasa, which is, as Dr. Bertrand has mentioned, about as spread out as the state of Rhode Island, how those services are distributed could be a key obstacle to at least some of the women not having access to family planning. So the way I approached it borrows very much from the notion and standards of food deserts, the way we measure food deserts throughout the United States, simply locating grocery store and decided that if you're beyond a certain distance from that grocery store, then you don't have proper access to fresh food. And so I've used pretty much the same methods and the same standards, which might be questionable, I'll get back to it in a minute, to identify family planning deserts and areas where we had better accessibility. We came up, after many discussions, with a color coding of facilities according to the level of family planning services. So red was for the facilities that did not offer family planning service that day. Yellow was for limited or minimal family planning services. So basically, if you had a yellow, that means there was somewhere in a drawer a modern methods available that you could distribute on that day. And green was for our now infamous Green Star facilities. And then among the many analyses, and I'm going to show you some of those maps that we performed, we created 1 kilometer buffer that we overlaid on areas with adequate coverage for family planning services. So all those little yellow and green dots got attributed a 1 kilometer buffer. And the 1 kilometer is a little bit arbitrary. There's no international standard set for what constitutes being close enough to family planning services to be deemed having access to it. But we estimated that in Kinshasa, that represents about 20 minutes walk, so that's 40 minutes total. And that's about the time, the amount of time that a woman in Kinshasa could take off her day to go purchase or obtain a family planning methods. And I hope that in the future we get better information on barrier to use and accessibility, that we're going to be able to come up with a more scientific number than that arbitrary 1 kilometer. But that's what we started working with. Where things got a little bit interesting is that we translated those maps not just in static maps that you would see using geographic information system, but into interactive maps using Google Earth. So each of the surveyed facilities appears as a dot that is color-coded according to the regulations that I mentioned earlier. And each of those dots is clickable. So if you click on a dot, you're going to have all the information that has been recorded for that facility that will open up. And because of the Google Earth background, it makes it way easier for whoever you're presenting those maps to identify the facility and to orient themselves in space, because they're going to recognize the stadium, a park, the river. It's going to be a little bit easier for them to figure out where they are, because maps are not necessarily intuitive tools to use. And they're fun. And I say that with having recognized all the importance this could have in gathering awareness, in raising attention, in grabbing people's eyes. One of the many problems we have in any type of studies, of surveillance studies, strategic information you're trying to collect, is that you're very likely to conduct a very sophisticated study, produce a lot of information, and never see that information being used in any way, shape, or form. And one of the added bonus of those maps for advocacy purpose is that we found out that they grabbed people's eyes, and it was very easy to get official stakeholders to partake in the conversations once you start showing what exactly is happening, not just in Kinshasa in general or in a cell on a table, but actually on that dot that corresponds to that hospital that is under your responsibility. So that was one of the innovation with the mapping of those facilities and those survey results. What was also interesting from a technical point of view is how we did create those maps. And I will let you ponder the things you can do these days with a few smartphones and a couple of open source GIS software. Electronic data collection, not just in family planning services, all around public health and just about any area that requires the collection of data for international development or public health projects, is a really hot topic right now. You have many systems around, many tools, many applications. Everybody seems to have their own ideas. And so the strategy we used for this particular project was, what is the simplest, cheapest, most user-friendly system we can develop? And we came up with a suite of both smartphone data collection tools and open source GIS. So one is called QGIS, the other one is Google Earth, which I assume some of you are very familiar with. And we tried to put those in the hands of the Kinshasa School of Public Health and all the data collectors. And it worked out pretty well. We followed that recipe for successful technology transfer. One of the ingredients is to make sure that the new users are going to be familiar with at least some of the technology. And in the case of this study, we used Excel forms, we used Google Earth. Filling the surveys on the forms was very much like playing with any smartphone app or sending a text message, which are activities that people in the DRC were already very familiar with. So the learning curve, the initial amount of new skills to acquire, was not overly daunting. Most of the trainings took 2 days top, and most of the data collectors and supervisors mastered those skills in less than half a day. And this was definitely, I think, something that is very important, because you cannot just import extremely complicated and complex fireworks technology and assume that people are going to take what is already very, very, I mean, takes time out of already very, very busy day, learn them, remember them 6 months later when you come for the next round of service. So what we did is, what can we do with skills that people already have? The new tools are appropriate to the technological environments. In this case, we use basic laptops and smartphones, just to give you an idea, and that's at the bottom here. I'm stealing my own thunder, but the smartphones we use were $120 per unit, and we've been using them 3 times so far, and we plan on using them even more. So if you think about what it costs to ship questionnaires, for example, to every corner of Kinshasa, I think we've already saved some money on that investment. And we used a very light open source server, so everything was free, everything was open source, and everything was user friendly. So that's, I think, some of the lessons we've learned from implementing that data collection strategy. So what else have we done besides putting those dots on the map? The Google Earth maps that we've produced, as I've said, they are very interesting to raise awareness. You pop that up in a meeting, and people are going to want to click on it and see what's going on and see all those little dots. So they are interesting from a programmatic point of view. Technically, I find them a little bit limiting, and so we have, once, now that we have your attention with those clickable dots, what can we do in terms of spatial analysis that's going to help you to make decisions to better distribute and improve physical, again, access to family planning services? So the first thing we did is count the number of facilities offering minimal family planning per health zones, because that's the one national standard in the plan, the family planning national plan, is that each health zone in Kinshasa must have at least 5 facilities offering basic family planning services. And so here's what we found. So the greener, the darker the green, the more facilities you have in that health zones that offer minimal family planning, and the red ones, so you only have 3 of them, are the ones that do not meet the standards, that have less than 5 facilities offering minimum family planning. Which, if you look at that map, say, well, that ain't too bad. We have only 3 of them. They're pretty specific ones, because Kokolo is for the military. They have their own administration when it comes to public health. Police is the same thing. It's the police department's health zones. So we really only have one that is extremely problematic, and the rest of them seem to be doing okay. Well, you're talking about a city of 10 million residents living in it, and they are not equally distributed. And so one thing we added is counting the number of facilities offering minimal family planning per 100,000 people in each of the health zones. And this census data, this population estimates, is based on an estimate that UNICEF gave us from 2009, it's extremely hard to know how many people live in Kinshasa. It's certainly extremely hard to know how many people live in each of the health zones. So that's the best estimate we have. Regardless, here's the map you obtain, and there you see a lot more red, a lot more yellow, and not that many, except for the Gombe, which is, for those of you who are familiar with Kinshasa, that's downtown Kinshasa, and that's also where all the expats and international organizations are located. You don't see that many health zones that meet the standards of five sites. So that was the first wake-up call, I would say. And then we took that and said, well, once we have identified the most problematic ones, and that's always the main use of GIS, or one of the most interesting use of GIS, is figuring out if you are in a resource-constrained environment, if I have only so many new sites that I can open or support, where should I put them to make sure that they're going to address as many of the as-of-yet unmet needs of the population and of the city here. So we have identified the problematic children of the health zones. So, well, once we know that, what do we do? And so we have used those maps as a decision support tool for evidence-based planning. We have identified the underserved areas, and then we had two different strategies. Either they were facilities in those health zones, but they were not up to the standards that we had proposed. In this case, the strategy would be to encourage donors to support those existing sites. For those that did not have any sites at all, then you could use further GIS analysis to try to determine the optimal location size to make sure that you're basically located in the center of the underserved areas. Any new points of distribution you're going to put there is going to increase the coverage. So that's those two scenarios, and we've seen them both. This is in the case of Barumbu, which is just south of Gombe along the river. And in the case of Barumbu, there are two sites, those two red dots, that are located pretty much in the middle of the health zones and that did not offer family planning services. They were offering the family planning in services in theory, but they did not have any methods available on the day of the survey. They were lacking some of those characteristics that would deem them adequate. So the idea would be to meet with the médecin chef de zone and tell him, listen, or her, listen, you have those two facilities here. They were not up to standards, but with just a little bit more support, you would significantly increase the coverage in that health zones. So that's one of the scenarios we've had. The second scenario is something you see in Kinsenso, which is also one of these underserved areas. And here the situation is a little bit different. You see that they have a number of sites, so all those green and yellow dots, that offer enough or sufficient family planning services. The stripy area shows the 1 kilometer buffer that I was telling you about, so that shows the areas that is considered as having access according to that criteria. And then you have all this area in the center of Kinsenso that doesn't have any facilities. And here the strategy would have been, well, how about if we start not necessarily a new site, a full-fledged site, but community-based distribution points. Where should we locate those distribution points to make sure that as many people as possible who as of yet did not have access to family planning services would have access? So how do we locate them so that they are not redundant with services that already exist? And if you add Google Earth for interactive mapping, you get an even better visualization. So what you see here, that Google Earth screenshot corresponds to that green square on the map. And because you could say, well, here you have an entire area of the health zones that doesn't seem like it has coverage, but you could imagine maybe nobody lives there. Maybe it's just it's a ditch somewhere, or it's a portion, especially for these semi-rural health zones, just a bunch of fields, then nobody there. So what we did is we overlay on that buffer, so what is stripy on the static map is the yellow area on the Google Earth screenshot, and you see that what's outside here, that corresponds to the underserved area, we can see roofs and we can see houses, and obviously there are people living there, so obviously we need to take care of these people and try to figure out where to locate new family planning sites. And from my experience last summer, meeting with several médecins chefs de zone and discussing the situation in their health zones, this combination of both the static map and showing the Google Earth screenshot was very effective in getting them engaged into saying, oh yeah, I know there's a store somewhere, or there's a community center in that part that is not served, that I know of, this is the roof here, and they would be a good place for a community-based distribution point. So that is a great tool to have people interact, and where they're going to see themselves and the health zones that are in charge of, not just again as a cell or line or row on a table buried in a 154 pages report, but literally put them literally on the map. So that was kind of the lessons we had learned from that little experiment. What's next? So as I've said, the map served as a basis for discussion with the Médecins Chefs de Zone on the status of the FP service accessibility in their health zones. We are putting together, we're just finishing compiling all 35 maps into what we want to turn into an atlas of family planning services in Kinshasa. And that's going in 2-3 years from the black box to having a full compilation, a full knowledge of what is available in Kinshasa and where it is. And then the next steps. So the next steps are going to be taken in two directions that, of course, are going to we're going to cross paths several times along the way. One of them is that, as I've repeated several times, accessibility is not just about physical proximity, that there are other determinants to accessibility of why a woman would go obtain contraceptives from a facility or another, and you could this approach so far has been very much supply oriented, but we all know that you could design the best possible healthcare facility distributing the cheapest contraceptive methods if there are other reasons why women might not want to use modern contraceptives. You have done nothing. So the idea would be to overlay, now that we have some data about uses and the determinants and the behavior and attitudes of women towards the use of modern contraceptives, overlay this with the supply map and try to understand where we have discrepancies, where we have gaps, and where we might have surprising results. So stay tuned for that because I don't know myself yet. And then the other directions that we're going in, this has been a data set that we have exploited until it's dry right now. We've pressed everything we could out of that data set, and it reflects the situation on a few days in October in 2013. Where the next challenge is how could we get this interactive atlas to reflect the situation of last week and of next week and of next month? And that's why what I want literally for Christmas, because I'm going back in December to work on this, is to create a routine monitoring system for contraceptive flows and stockouts. And that would be even more low-tech, if you can imagine that. That would be using cell phone, interactive platform, and that would be integrated into the National Health Information System. And what we hope to accomplish with that is to have a lot of those very neat, neatly packaged little studies are very interesting to all of us in this room. They are very interesting when we present them at a conference. But quite often, the Médecins Chefs de Zone and the local healthcare staff, what they want is rapid feedback, rapid reaction when they say, hey, we're having a stockout, and that's why women are not getting contraceptive access right now. And so that's the new layer we'd like to work on, is to normalize that type of information so that it's available to even more people and to the people who need it the most, which are people at the local level, in order to be able to operate properly. Thank you very much.
Let me add one point to Julie's presentation, and that is that we are also, as we speak, rolling out a community-based distribution program in Kinshasa, such that this idea of identifying where best to put new sites is not theoretical. We are in the process. So let's see. Merci.
So I have several parts to answer. First of all, the level of risk, what is truly risk here is the breach of confidentiality. And that's as big, as long as you go through the cloud, you'll run that risk. It doesn't matter how sophisticated the platform at the end where you're going to store the actual data is. So that's one thing. I think it's not ODK is not compliant with the guidelines, that the guidelines are not up to speed with ODK. And we are very much, from an ethical point of view, I think ethics regulations are very much behind everything that has to do with technology-based data collection. Even the mapping in itself could be arguably problematic if you follow those guidelines very strictly, because you're still putting a dot on the map. Is GPS coordinates are a way of identifying people and facilities and information in general, so that's problematic. I'm not familiar with what happens with clinical practice and with specific trials, but I know that for having dealt with IRB on this project, they are, for example, in the case of ODK, first of all, the good thing about ODK is that you don't have to go through the cloud. You could also, and that's what we use, not for confidentiality reasons, but for backup reason, we've had an offline backup where you directly plug your phone into a computer that is a dedicated computer that is password protected, and you will upload the data that's on the phone on that laptop. And the argument that we had made to the IRB is that there's no more a risk of a breach of confidentiality if the cell phone could get stolen, but so could your questionnaires, your paper surveys. And once it's offline and it's a computer, it's a laptop that is password protected, then it's like having your master database on a password protected laptop. That doesn't change anything. So the game changer, ethically speaking, I think, is going through the cloud and through those form hub, or the thing with Open Data Kit is that natively it works with a Google App Engine, which is the property of Google. And I think the worry is that Google is going to poke their nose into the data, as they are prone to do. But there are other ways. The completely offline option, in my mind, doesn't present any more risk, ethically speaking, than going through a paper survey that you enter in a master database. Going through the cloud, yeah, you always have the risk that the cloud database is going to be broken into. But we have safeguards. The cell phones were password protected. The server that we used, the Form Hub server, was password protected. Only some people had access to the data could download edits. Again, also in our case, so that to make sure that nobody was messing around with the data we had saved. So the cloud is an issue, maybe. It has safeguards, and I think it's more fear of the unknown, and it will be caught up really fast on by IRBs around the world than an actual higher risk for a breach of confidentiality of the data. That's my take on it. And I think, in any case, the offline solution works for electronic data collection, so you don't have to go to a cloud. I don't know if that answers. I know that's so long-winded answer. No. No, and I tend to get, Jane will tell you, I tend to get into
the... As you get into the GCP world, you know, it's not your opinion which counts. Your software has to be certified as being GCP compliant. If not, it's out. And that one is out for now. So it's more than I'm jealous in that I was asking, I mean, if you have any knowledge of any open source platform, you know, for data entry, on the web, for example, there are several options. We use OpenCivica, which is an open source GCP compliant platform. So we enter the data directly on the web in a distributed fashion, and that's all okay. It's not only the confidentiality, it's the way you back up, the way you track any change you make, the answers, I mean, the quality control trail, all that. OpenCivica can have that, webcam to some extent, and continuity. So I'm just hoping that there will be soon something on the cell phone will be GCP compliant, so I can use it. So it's just that I'm jealous.
No, and I think it's going to be that's going to be an assignment for a few students to put up a battle with IRBs and just demonstrate that at every step of the process, what they're proposing to use is just as compliant. I mean, it's just following the rules just as much.
GCP compliant material. There are only new things GCP compliant. I don't even.
Yeah, I don't know IRB regulations. I know IRB is not the fastest moving entity around here, so I don't know how we get
all right, to cut off this political discussion.
Okay.
Let me just say that I know that Pierre Vukens came to support his faculty and students here at this presentation. He also has a self-interest in that he just won a Gates Foundation grant to do syphilis and pregnancy, a study of which one arm will be taken in Kinshasa. So I would just like to point out that, and Julie, you'd do a better job of walking through this, but where exactly Dean Vukens is going to be? Because here we are in the 35 health zones. The reason that Julie has to make this insert here is, okay, here's Nsele, which is this huge health zone, largely rural. And you can see, if you check the where Nsele stops here on this larger map, how absolutely huge Nsele would go on to be. And this is before you get to Maluku 2 and Maluku 1. And Pierre, you're in which one or two? I think it's two. Oh, you're moving closer into town, are you? Okay, fine. So in any case, you're going to be part of the insert, not part of the central city here. So, other questions? Yes. Well, that's why we're so glad you're here. Yes. Thanks. I think there are really three ways that there was that increase in access. One I should mention is that between the baseline and the follow-up, transmission of PMTCT, prevention of mother-to-child transmission, named their second pillar to be family planning. So more sites through HIV funding became active in giving out family planning services. We're finding out that they're really not great family planning servers based on how much volume they're generating, but at least there are sites out there. Our role was one of helping the national program to convene organizations that were already in the business, but who really greatly benefited from having coming together almost as a family planning movement or a family planning community around this. And I think that became, there became some influence there of peers, not peer pressure, but peer motivation is more than anything else. You know, my data are going to be out there and people are going to be looking at my data, and I would like to do a better job of this. The third is we are actively involved in a phase that we haven't presented here, which is a new project that strengthens family planning service delivery as well as setting up this community-based distribution. We're hoping to have 700 community-based distributors in Kinshasa before the end of 2015. So we have been primarily the research arm on this, but also in a coordinating role to not put the services on the ground, but bring more systematic approach to those who are in that already are funded to do that. Thanks. I think I'll jump in and say the simple answer is no. That it was a very simple survey. I mean, there were only about 10 variables on the survey, and catchment area was not one of them. And as you can see, there's a lot of overlapping catchment areas as well, so it would have been hard to say the exact catchment area for any one of those.
facilities.
But we wish you did.
Presented. Those were done on cheap smartphones, but smartphones nonetheless, they're Android smartphones, and they were owned by, well, KSP Edge and Tulane and the data collectors, and we loaned them to the data collectors and the surveyors and the supervisors. And that's why it was very interesting from the electronic data collection point of view, but as far as creating a routine monitoring system, we know that's not sustainable, even though the smartphone penetration in DRC is quite, especially in Kinshasa, is quite staggering. At this point, we are realistic, and we know the coverage is not perfect. However, everybody has a cell phone, like one of those burner phone, simple cell phones. I know there's got to be a technical name for them, which is called burner phones. But so we know that everybody's going to have that, and in that routine monitoring system, so for availability, stockouts, etc., that's what we're going to be using. So it's going to be a much simpler syntax for reporting, and we're going to partner, we think, with Vodacom to have, and essentially it's going to be the person responsible for monitoring the stocks at the health facility, who's going to be in charge of sending those reports every week, we think, in the pilot phase of the project. And the way we're going to create incentive for that is simply partnering with Vodacom, and for each SMS that the person sends, a text message that the person sends, they get a free one from Vodacom or some sort of package like this. And we know this has been done throughout Sub-Saharan Africa, and every cell phone company who's trying to get an in and some good PR in Sub-Saharan Africa is willing to partner with that type of initiative. So it's going to be the médecin or the M&E officer for larger facilities, cell phone, and that's what we're going to be using. So.
And then you'll be collecting the data on a more regular basis? Or?
Yeah, it's going to be the objective for the... So the pilot phase should start in January, and we have plans to do that for... 25 and 50 structures, so 75 structures total. We're going to especially target those peripheral, semi-rural health zones of Kinshasa, because we figured if you can do it there, then it's going to be much easier to do it in the central city. So we're starting with the hardest part of the city to try to make sure that it works. And we will collect the data every week in the first phase. We want to limit that, the options that so that it's sustainable. We want to limit the number of indicators, which we have to talk about after this, and try to make sure that people remain engaged, and make sure that we have also some sort of feedback mechanism that they could see a reaction on an intervention following reporting a stockout. We need to have somebody be in touch with them and say, hey, we're going to deliver contraceptives to you in the next week, because that's how we're going to, because quite often the people at the local level send. Or do not send, but even when they send information, that routine information, they don't see anything in reaction to that, and that's very frustrating and very demotivating in the long term, and that doesn't foster a culture of data sharing all around. So that's what we're going to try to do at least.
We
know in the near future. I mean, the pilot phase is just us flying with it, and then the next phase will be to integrate it into the National Health Information System. That's also why we want something very low-tech and very user-friendly, and that is compatible with the National Health Information System of the DRC, because we want to be able to expand.
Let me just say that JSI is in Kinshasa for malaria and not for family planning, and we are just devastated by that, but there's nothing we can do about that, is there? I think we're coming to the end of the session, unless there's any final questions. So what does PMA 2020 have in terms of, does the service delivery, because we didn't highlight it here, but the PMA survey has both a facility-based and a population-based survey. And does the PMA even say what other services are available at the site?
It does.
Okay.
It asks that, and I think it gives a few categories, but there's not a lot of detail that we get.
I don't think you could make the kind of causal link that you're implying.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, right. Leslie?
You know, I'm curious, I just have two last questions. One's about mapping. How long has it really taken you to map this? And if you had just dedicated time and that this was your only project, how long would it take you to map that area? And secondly, have you thought about video? I was looking at something on video, mapping with video in another plot, and have you videoed any of this to go back and sort of again, brainstorm, why are there less FP sites in one area than another?
So let me answer the first one because you're speaking to my heart. That's the yes. The short answer is yes. That's the one of the wonderful things with Google Earth is that you can add any type of format. So right now we have those clickable points with all the data information coming up from the survey, which you know is interesting, but it could be fancier than that. And so the next round of fireworks could be filming some of the women that we're interviewing for, you know, why do you or don't you use modern contraceptives, and have that put on a map where you can imagine a dot with a little picture of the woman, and when you click on it, you have that video playing. So you could very much imagining this. We have, in terms of fireworks and technical gizmos for advocacy, the options are almost limitless. There's a system right now in Ghana for maternal health where women out of a cell phone call, very much like when you call a server to change your plane tickets and it drives you nuts. Here it's that you call a server and it says, oh, if you're 3 months pregnant, push one. If you're 6 months pregnant, push two. And you will have messages recorded about what you're supposed to do. You could very much imagine the same system for family planning. If you're interested in methods that are visible, that you take every day, if you're interested in methods that are non-chemical, push 3, 4, 5, 6. So that's, yes, there are a ton of possibilities. How much time it takes me for mapping? It's a more complicated question because it depends, first of all, how sophisticated the analysis should be. But the dirty secret of GIS, and especially for my work, is that a lot of the mapping has to do with data cleaning. Which means that if Linné and Saleh spent nearly 2 months cleaning up that database and making it all clean, I can produce those maps in a little under an hour. So the mapping itself doesn't take time. What takes a lot of time is cleaning the data, making sure that everything is formatted the correct way. And so that's, in this sense, is very much like analyzing any database. Which is also another reason why electronic data collection is fantastic, because you get to pre-format a number of those recorded informations that you're interested in that will help speed up the process. But the mapping in itself, after that, if you're the time consuming part is the data cleaning.
I thank everyone for coming to the session, and stay tuned for what happens in the future. Thanks.